6. And this week I brought along Plato. So we're going to come back to the Plato in a little bit. But one of the things that Plato strikes me is that Plato at its best, and of course it's the scourge of pretty much any household with young kids, Plato at its best is moldable, shapeable, right? You can make it into whatever your mind can come up with or whatever your hands are skilled at creating, which for me is not much. But Plato at its best is moldable and changeable. And what I want to suggest this morning is that part of what it means to follow Jesus boldly, part of what it means to be a disciple of Jesus, which is what this series has been about as we're walking through Lent, we're looking at the example of the disciples, how the disciples lived with Jesus, how they followed him. Part of what we're going to see this morning is that being a disciple who follows Jesus is that we would be moldable, changeable, and shapeable, always more and more into the likeness of Jesus. You ever have those moments, though, where you come face to face with the reality that you don't know everything you thought you knew? All right, so for me, and this is going to sound like a really silly story, but it actually, when I think back on my life, this was one of those moments that sticks out in my mind. I had just started as a graduate student at the University of Florida, and I'm sitting in my first class, the second week of class, right? And you know, when you're doing courses, the first week is you talk about the syllabus, and then the second week you actually begin the work. So I had done my homework. I thought I was sufficiently prepared for class. And we were talking about this war in Roman history, and the details don't really matter. All that matters is that this war was fought primarily between two guys, Marius and Sulla. You don't need to remember those names. But they were at war with each other. And I come to class, and the professor is going through, and we're talking about the background of this text that we're going to read. And he says, all right, well, let's make sure we've got some of the major players straightened out. So who were some of Marius's allies? Corey, why don't you tell us? Now, I had done the work. I thought I was pretty good at what I do. I thought I was well prepared. And I sat there, and I went, I have no idea. So I cast around my mind, I'm like, oh man, okay, I did read this article. Who did I think of? What were some names that stuck out? Remember, the war was fought between Marius and Sulla. Here I am, my first graduate level class. Here I am, I've been top of my class in every class that I've taken at Calvin. I literally took every single class that the classics department at Calvin College offered. I think I'm pretty awesome. I'm sitting in class and I go, Sulla? Literally named the enemy of the guy who I was just asked to name as ally. Now, that doesn't seem like that big of a deal, but for me, this is one of those moments that I sat there and I went, oh my goodness, I felt like a complete idiot. But more importantly, the reason that that story sticks out in my mind, the reason that I remember it so vividly, the reason that I could tell you exactly which chair I was sitting in the seminar room at the Classics Department of the University of Florida, the reason that I remember that story is because it smacked me upside the head with the reality that I didn't know everything I thought I knew. And I came face to face with the reality that I don't know everything. Right? We all have these moments, these times in our lives where we come face to face with the reality that we don't know what we think we know. Right? Maybe we're going through life and suddenly life just goes a different direction than what we expected, and we find ourselves looking at a situation with our kids, looking at a situation with our family, looking at a situation with our friends, and we go, I have no idea how to handle this. Or maybe we encounter somebody who thinks a certain way that we've never encountered before, and we go, I don't know how to square this with what I've always believed about my faith. Or maybe we have a way that we think that God operates, and then suddenly we encounter something about our life or about our world, and we go, wait a minute. face with information that contradicts something we already believe, we are actually more likely to hold to that false belief more firmly than to have our mind changed. Right? When we see when somebody presents us with evidence that disproves something we believe, we are more likely to believe that thing more firmly than to have our mind changed. And in fact, as psychologists have studied how do we overcome the backfire effect, one of the only things that they found that actually works to overcome the backfire effect is to first start by affirming this other person, right? Say, you know, you're really smart, and I really value your opinion. Have you thought about this? And if that's not evidence for the fallen nature of humanity, I don't know what is, because the only way to convince me that I'm wrong about something is first to tell me how awesome I am. But the reality is, when we come face to face with the ways that life doesn't match what we expected, when we come face to face with information that challenges what it is that we believe, when we come face to face with experiences that make us wonder if we really know everything we think we know, we are more likely to cling to what we believe and to become inflexible about it than to change. The end result of that end result of inflexibility, is the faith of real human beings. I think of my friend Pete. Pete has been a scientist his whole life. He is one of the most critical question-asking people I've ever known. He doesn't take anything at face value. Pretty soon he figured out that his questions weren't welcome in the church. His constant trying to figure out how things fit together, it wasn't welcome. So he left. I think about Jen, who suddenly her life took a turn into a direction that she never expected it was going to, and it didn't match with what people thought her life was supposed to look like. And when her life didn't match what people thought her life should look like, the response was judgment, to ignore her, to pretend that she wasn't there, and she left the church. I think about my friend Seth. Seth grew up in a faith tradition that had all the answers. Everything was black and white. Everything was very clear. You had a way, you had an answer for every situation, and you had a very clear dividing line between them. And then Seth went and he experienced life that didn't fit into the black and white categories he had learned. He had experiences that didn't quite match with the black and white categories he had learned. And he looked at his life, he looked at what he was seeing in the world, and he said, this doesn't fit with this black and white categories that I've always learned. And he left the church. I'm tired. I'm tired of watching my friends walk away from the church because they find that their questions aren't welcome. I'm tired of watching my friends walk away from the church because they don't fit with our expectation of what they're supposed to look like. I'm tired of watching my friends walk away from the church because when they face experiences and have different ideas and opinions that don't match with the categories that they've always been told, that they're not welcome. I think what we see in the relationship between Jesus and his disciples is a willingness to learn, a willingness to change, a willingness always to be molded and shaped more and more into the likeness of Jesus, and a willingness to ask questions. We see that in Mark chapter 4. Now in Mark chapter 4, Jesus begins teaching his disciples and the crowds in parables, and his disciples are a little confused by the parable that Jesus just taught them. And so they come to him and they ask him a question about why he taught them in parables. Now, if I were to ask you, if or have you ever seen this? If ever I answer, you know, I'm not sure, I think I have, I haven't. But the reality is I know that I do it, and the reason that I do it is because I want to seem like I have it all together. I want, if you ask me if I've read some book about church leadership or about theology or anything, well, I can't let on that I don't know what you're talking about. So I'm like, you know, I think I have. Why don't you tell me a little more? I have no idea. As soon as you walk away, I'm going to pull out my phone. I'm going to Google whatever book or author you just told me about so that then the next time I see you, I can pretend that I know more about it than I really do. The disciples and those around him asked him about the parables. When we come face to face with what we don't know, when we encounter the reality that we don't have it all together, when we encounter the reality that our lives are messy and broken, and that our lives don't fit into the categories and the paradigms that we thought they're supposed to, when we figure out that we don't have it all together, and we don't understand what God is doing, and we don't understand how God is working in this situation, rather than sitting there and pretending that we have it all figured out, rather than sitting there and acting and going home and just going about our merry business, what happens when we stop and we go to Jesus and we say, Jesus, I don't get it. Happens as we begin to grow. We begin to change. We begin to be molded more and more into the likeness of Jesus. Because that's what Jesus says, right? We come back to this verse that we already saw. He told him, the kingdom of God has been given to you. The secret of the kingdom of God. Now, when Jesus says the secret of the kingdom of God has been given to you, we're not talking about some special knowledge that only a few have access to. We're not saying that there's something special and unique about the disciples. What is unique and special about the disciples and those around him is that they stayed and asked. What is special and unique, and the reason that they have the secret of the kingdom of God, is because they recognize that they don't have it all together. They recognize that they don't know everything. And they asked. And they said, help me understand. But to those on the outside, everything is said in parables so that they won't understand, so that they will be forced to ask and be forced to come back to it and be forced to wonder and ponder and dig deeper and never be content with things the way they are. See, I think that little word, so that, sorry, it's one word in Greek, those two little words in English, so that, Jesus teaches in parables so that we have to dig in deeper. We have to ask questions. We have to be open to change. And we have to be open to what God is doing in a given situation and in a given circumstance. And when our experience of life and the world doesn't match with what we thought of how it was supposed to be, we say, God, help me understand. See, as disciples of Jesus, we are never, ever done growing. We are never, ever done changing. We are never, ever done being molded and shaped into the likeness of Jesus. We will never have arrived. Stan Mast, who's the former pastor at LaGrave Avenue CRC downtown, he wrote a book called Someday You'll Be a Good Preacher. When I first saw that title, I was like, really? Come on. I can be a good preacher. No, the reality is I'm never done growing. I will never be the preacher that God is calling me to be because I'm always growing and learning and changing. None of us have all the questions answered. None of us have arrived at who God is creating and calling us to be. And to be a disciple means that we are open to how God is molding and brokenness and not having